Welcome to In the Hive, I'm Roger McDonough. Last week on this show, we talked about air pollution in northern Utah. The takeaway from a study by BYU, U of U, and other researchers was that air pollution shortens life expectancy in Utah, on average, by 2 years. There's a variety of ways that air pollution does that, through short and long-term exposure, but I'm just going to pause there for a second. 2 years. It can be easy to just gloss over statistics, but really, if you could find a way to cut into that deficit, wouldn't you want to? Time, after all, is all we've got until we don't. On that show, we spoke with Republican Representative Stephen Handy, who, as a result of that study, wants to better track deaths where air pollution may have been a contributing factor. His measure at this year's legislative session would let doctors and medical examiners say, officially, on a person's death certificate, that air pollution was a cause.
In 2020, we had Dr. Ben Abbott from BYU came with a study that's indicating that there could be an impact on mortality rates as much as 2 years. In other words, air quality in Utah, poor air quality in Utah, could be affecting the longevity of a person's life by 2 years. And I went, what the heck? And so I started looking at his study, and it was peer-reviewed. 27 researchers agree with his findings. And so I got thinking about it. I thought, what should we do about this? And then I read an article in the 2021 issue of National Geographic. The entire edition was dedicated to air pollution globally. And I read about a woman in London whose daughter died of a contributing factor was air pollution. But she wanted this on the death certificate, and she had to petition the city council to have that added. And she had quite a tussle, quite a battle. And so the thought of my occurred to me, like, we don't really have the data points. I wonder if we ought to add this as an option that could be a contributing factor for air pollution. And then going forward 5 or 10 years, policymakers will come together and say, oh my word, we got bigger problems than we thought we did. We thought we were cleaning the air, but look what's happening. We've got to accelerate our efforts.
The convenience of our cars is one of the major problems here. Of course, the burning of fossil fuels has bigger impacts at the global scale. But when it comes to the particulate pollution that is especially worrying to health experts, called PM2.5, the single largest source for that here in northern Utah is vehicle emissions, according to the Utah Division of Air Quality. A not-so-close second, by the way, is homes and buildings. But I mentioned the convenience of our cars. It's that convenience that makes them so addicting. The fact that many of our cities, especially here in the West, have been designed to get you into your car to complete the necessary tasks required in your life. A couple of years back on this show, I spoke with Tim Sullivan, a planner and author of the book Ways to the West: How Getting Out of Our Cars is Reclaiming America's Frontier. And he described the problematic design of our cities.
One of the distinguishing characteristics of our cities in the West is that they're new, is that they don't have the advantages of cities in the East or even in the Midwest, where there's a large portion of them that was built before the invention of the automobile, or even, I guess, the popularization of the automobile. And so our cities have come about after cars became really prevalent, and so they were designed around cars. For example, we have a relatively small core of our metro region here in Salt Lake City, and then the suburban cities have, you know, very small historic cores, but in between, you know, is urban fabric for probably 80% of the metro region that was designed for cars. And it wasn't just the streets. It's basically the entire system that was designed for cars, the land uses too.
I mean, and you're contrasting this with cities in the East, as you said, where there was big infrastructure for moving a lot of people in Manhattan or in Boston, et cetera.
A lot of those cities had transit systems built from the 1800s, early 1900s, that were moving a lot of people and still are used today. Even the suburban areas are a lot more walkable and compact and have walkable activity centers. Whereas for us, you think your average person living in the Wasatch Front is going to think about, okay, well, where could I walk to? Maybe there's a park, maybe there's a school. but it's unlikely that most of the daily needs can be met within walking distance of, you know, half a mile to a mile, or even bicycling distance sometimes to 2 miles. So the whole system was basically built for the automobile. So that's what we're trying to undo, is not just the streets, but it's also the land uses, the real estate industry, you know, everything about the way we build our cities.
One important part of undoing that system, Sullivan says, is simply getting people into other patterns of transportation use.
A lot of policy and economics just really pushed toward the automobile. And so we can change again by, again, taking our policy decisions and shaping them around a more multimodal transportation environment. And a lot of that is thinking about, there's economics too, and thinking about making those other modes more competitive. So if I'm a person and I have a commute, you know, how do you make that commute more competitive on other modes? How do you make it kind of balance out a little bit more for that person to drive by themselves versus take transit, take a van pool through UTA or something, even carpool, you know? And so people in transit, you know, are constantly thinking, how do we make it faster? How do we make it more reliable? How do we make it cheaper in order to compete with the automobile?
So what if the buses and trains that move people en masse really did become competitive on the convenience side of things, and convenient in terms of cost savings for commuters? Well, also at this year's legislative session, a proposal by Salt Lake Democratic Representative Joel Briscoe aims to make a simple, but kind of revolutionary change to public transportation. I spoke with Representative Briscoe earlier this week. Representative Joel Briscoe, thanks for making time for this conversation.
You're welcome. Happy to speak with you about how we can clean up our air.
All right. And that's the motivation, I guess, behind HB 164. And the premise of this bill is, it seems pretty simple. I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind just telling us in your own words what the bill would do.
There are over 100 cities around the world, including the U.S., where there are no charges for mass transit or minimal charges for mass transit. And HB 164 would add Utah to that list. We have done experiments. We've had a few days 3-4 years ago during the holiday season in December. 3 years ago, I got legislation passed which set up a fund. We've used those during winter inversions. We used them this past summer when ozone was really bad. Every time we offer no fares on UTA, ridership goes up.
And so this is an extension of that. I mean, this would do away with fares altogether. You mentioned this at the outset, but the idea is to clean up the air.
24/7, 365. Every day, all year long, every hour. Front runner, tracks, buses.
The language of the bill says that this would prevent a large transit agency from collecting fares for passenger. Would that not impact the bottom line for UTA?
Yeah, it'll cost somewhere between $30 and $50 million a year.
And I guess what's the operating budget of UTA?
You know, I looked that up, and it was $500 or $600 million. I did do some preliminary work on the state budget, and I've asked League of City and Towns to do some work for me on cities. But the state, in a very recent year, for every dollar we spent on transit, most of that was going to double tracking front runner, which is a great idea. But this, for every dollar the state was spending on double tracking front runner, we spend $20 on roads. It's 20-1. And one of my goals and one of my frustrations is that people say, "Oh, are you kidding me, Briscoe? $50 million? $50 million to help more people ride mass transit and clean the air?" But they don't blink an eye at $2 billion for roads.
For roads. I mean, it's interesting. If UTA's operating budget can be in the hundreds of millions of dollars and revenues from fares account for tens of millions of dollars, then we're talking about, you know, a small percentage.
But it's the fiscal note is like 40 to 50, and then you have to back out $3 million that they spend now to collect fares, which they wouldn't have to expend. So $37 to $47 million.
You said that you know, some people say to you, come on, Briscoe, this is going to cost $50 million. That's a lot of money. I guess how much opposition do you expect? Have you tried to run this bill before, by the
no.
way? Okay. How do you expect there to be people worried about it?
Sure. I expect opposition. There's opposition to getting rid of the sales tax on food. There's opposition to letting counties and county councils have mask mandates. Sure, there's going to be opposition. And, you know, I'm a little worried when something's unanimous. Although I do constantly remember that in 1970, when they upgraded the Clean Air Act, created the EPA, it was 100-0 in the U.S. Senate. And Richard Nixon signed it. So there was a time in our past when we did not get into these McCoy Hatfield political food fights. Food fights is not a good analogy. It's, you know, it is Hatfields and McCoys, and often sometimes with weapons, and it's not good.
You talked about the studies looking at, you know, those free fare days on when we have the lead up to poor air quality or are experiencing poor air quality. A question that I have is, can you know the extent to which ridership might increase from those studies? Because they're limited. I think that I think that convenience is one of the pitfalls of people riding transit, right? Like they go out there, they think, oh, is my card loaded with enough money? Do I have to, you know, pull out the phone? If people could just hop on and hop off, you might see quite a bit more ridership. Have you, you know, looked at those other places where people have made the transition from paid fares to free, totally free transit, and seen how much over the course of a couple of years ridership has increased?
I haven't gotten into the weeds. I did pick this up on Amazon, free public transit, and it goes Mexico. There are 20, 30 cities in Poland, also in France, that have some version of free fares. Sometimes it's like weekends. Sometimes it's like people over 65 and under 12. In some cities, it's like the unemployed. There's more to this than air. Mobility, we need to, you know, instead of talking about equality, I'd like to talk about opportunity, economic opportunity. A lot of people are denied the chance to have a job, to have a decent job, to do various things because they can't get around as easily. They can't own a personal car. My daughter lives in the Bronx with two little kids. Lives 5 blocks from work, and she lives like 25 yards from a subway. And she can't afford a car. It would be a waste of money for her to pay the registration fees and the insurance because she walks or she gets on the subway to go down to Manhattan or to go to the museums or to take the kids to Central Park if they want to go to Central Park. And she gets around. There are some cities in Europe and a few in the U.S. who are talking about giving everyone a card. And with that one card, they integrate all transportation. They integrate electric scooters, taxis, metro, buses, rent a car for an hour. And I think we should look at that down the road. And then maybe people under a certain amount of income should get some money. We should help them with that card. We should put some money on it for them, so that we integrate an entire transportation system. There was a study done 10, 11 years ago in New England. They were looking at people who were low income, and they were looking at their ability to keep a job. And the number one criteria, the single most important factor, was not whether they had a high school diploma or college. It was whether they had reliable transportation. Did they live in a city with good mass transit, or did they have a car? And that alone was the number one issue that kept him in work.
Wow. And we've all seen these like viral social media stories of somebody walking to their job interview or walking to work for hours and hours and hours. And then, you know, by the goodness of the car dealership, the car dealership, seeing this tragic story, donates a car to the person. And that's not the way to solve the problem for everybody. Sorry, I'm now expounding. I guess it's an interesting proposal. Do you know if and when it will get a hearing?
I would expect it might be next week. It's got to be assigned to committee first, but it could be soon. I mean, that study done in New England, some guy who was a retired auto dealer, and like 30 years ago, if you wanted to buy a gasoline efficient car, it was cheap. And the expensive cars were the larger cars and the SUVs. Now, the gas-efficient EVs are expensive. And he set up a system working with some of the nonprofits in the area where they brought in women who are often single moms who are struggling. They provided them some work on managing their budget. They helped them see what they had to spend. And then they helped them. And as a retired auto dealer, he had friends who sold cars, and they found some good used cars that they, you know, fixed up and said, I mean, when I get a used car, I go look at Consumer Reports, right? And Consumer Reports says best cars under 10,000. And when I pay this one off in a year or so, I'm hoping that there'll be some used EVs on the market. Unfortunately, they're probably appreciating in price right now.
I have the same struggle. There's no way I could. There's no.
Well,
way
I also want to. Yeah. I also want to. I. The other thing I like to remind people is that it was a tragedy and it was an opportunity. March and April 2020, when we figured out that this pandemic was here with us for a bit and it was serious, and we shut everything down. And remember all the media posts and all the social media posts about, oh my gosh, look how beautiful our state is. Oh my gosh, look at the pristine blue skies and how many mountain ranges you can see past Great Salt Lake. The tragedy was we shut down the economy to do it. I want to try keeping the economy going and getting more of that back. I want to see pristine blue skies. I want to see clear mountain ranges. I want to get rid of the brown muck and haze and keep the economy going.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about the human health impacts of air pollution at all in this conversation, which is another factor. Have you talked to Utah Transit Authority about this proposal to
Yes.
make, and what do they say?
They're not for or against. They've given me information about fares. In fact, I think there's, I can't speak for them, but they've given me some information about some work they're doing behind the scenes. I mean, they're saying, look, legislature, do what you will. Some people think, I think they should just go out and only teachers have a bake sale to teach. I'm not asking UTA bus drivers and mechanics and front office personnel to work for free. I mean, I want them to be paid. I think given the $1 billion surplus the state has this year, finding $50 million bucks should not be that hard.
Again, that's Salt Lake Democratic Representative Joel Briscoe, who has a measure at this year's legislative session, not yet heard in committee, to eliminate fares on public transportation in Utah. In a statement, by the way, the Utah Transit Authority said that at this time they haven't taken a position on Representative Briscoe's proposal and that they're simply providing information requested by the legislature. Generally, UTA says that bus, tracks, and train fares account for about 15% of their annual revenues. A fiscal note from legislative analysts says that Representative Briscoe's bill could reduce revenue for UTA by $40 to $50 million. Though, as you heard, Briscoe says it's worth it because it will benefit everyone, not just transit riders. And he says there's money available right now to do this. While UTA didn't comment on this proposal, on Tuesday of this week, they unveiled something similar, albeit on a smaller and more temporary scale. For the month of February, all of its buses, light rail, and trains will be free to ride. It's an initiative that was spearheaded by Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall and has the support of various local governments, partner agencies, and private businesses. And again, this experiment is intended to make it easier to ride transit in an effort to cut back on emissions from cars. So I want to zoom out here for a minute before we wrap up this show. Have you ever just stopped to think about the origin of the fossil fuels we burn in our cars? Occasionally, I find myself pondering that story. One of the amazing realities of our planet is that almost all of our energy can ultimately be traced back to that star that we orbit, the sun. And oil and gas, those fossil fuels that come out of the Earth, they're no different. They contain carbon and started out as organic matter. Organic matter that huge geologic pressures over hundreds of millions of years have turned into, for example, crude oil. And that means that originally the oil and gas in your car started out as algae and plants that converted sunlight into chemical energy to sustain themselves through the process of photosynthesis. I know I'm not breaking any news with that little tidbit, but figured I'd toss it in just in case you'd forgotten. That does it for In the Hive today. I'll put links up to information on Representative Briscoe's bill and on the Free Fares February program UTA just unveiled, along with the podcast of this show over at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks, as always, for listening. Come back soon.
Listen to this. Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour, that's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day in an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way.